This episode of Your Kids Next Read is brought to you by bookgeek.com.au. BookGeek is the go-to destination for gifts for book lovers. Choose from a carefully curated selection of clothing, accessories, and homewares inspired by literary classics and new favourites. Your Kids Next Read listeners can enjoy a 10% discount at any time with the code YKNR. Terms and conditions apply. Shop at www.bookgeek.com.au/YKNR.
Welcome to episode 26 of Your Kids Next Read podcast, in which we talk about books and reading for kids of all ages. I'm Alison Tate, author of middle grade adventure series The Mapmaker Chronicles, The Adaban Cipher, and my latest, The Maven and Reeve Mystery Series, and I'm here with my co-host, the very tired Megan Daly, celebrity teacher librarian, blogger at Children's Books Daily, and author of Raising Readers, How to Nurture a Child's Love of Books. Megan and I, along with our good friend, our author Alison Rushby, are founders of the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. Search for Your Kids Next Read there to join us. So, Megan, tired Megan, what are the major events in Megan World this week?
I'm glad you mentioned the tired. I am actually tired because I have worked all week, worked all last week, and I worked all last weekend because I was recording books for Storybox Library, which was an enormous honour. And just the way it worked out, we really needed to do the 2 days in a row. So I am really tired, but I enjoyed it greatly. I was working with comedian Steph Tisdale and a really great Brisbane film crew, as well as being produced from Melbourne, and it was fantastic. It was so much work, and I've done Storybox Library readings before, but I just had forgotten how many hours goes into recording one 7-minute book. And for anyone that's worked in film, you know what I'm talking about. It feels like for every, well, I don't know what the ratio actually is, but it feels like for every, I don't know, 5 minutes of film, it's like an hour. So it was a huge amount of work, but I'm really, really excited about the upcoming books that both Steph and I are reading. We did 3 each, and my mother's dog Pepper also starred in one of the readings, and he did, you know, quite a sterling job. He was quite proud of himself. We didn't use my dog for obvious reasons, which I will probably talk about later, but my dog is highly anxious, sitting under my feet at the moment. I have my feet on him at the moment to keep him calm because we've got a bit of a storm happening here in Brisbane. But anyway, what have you been up to?
Oh, yeah, we should probably point out that if you hear rumbling, it could be the thunder at Megan's house, or it could be the guys cutting down a gum tree at my house, because the podcasting schedule waits for no tree or thunder, and we must press ahead. So, if you do hear those random things, I just want you to think about us in our office doing our best to sound professional while the world falls apart around us. Speaking of the world falling apart around us, I've had a computer disaster this week. You know, I've been like preparing my computer to move to a new computer and sort of tidying things up. I've been talking about this endlessly for months because that's how long it takes. It turns out I left it just a couple of days too late because my email application just like crashed last week and has been unable to be opened since. So now the whole lot has to go to the repair shop before I can transfer anything. It does. Look, honestly, you wouldn't read about it. The thing with being a writer is I use a computer that has a huge amount of capacity. It is what I'm used to, and so that is what I do. It has a massive screen. It's got two, you know, I can have several documents up at once, and I absolutely adore it. But I only use a tiny bit of it, really. They tend to outlive the normal lifespan of what a computer should do because I don't use so much of it. And so the one that I'm currently working on has, I bought it, well, it's a 2013, just take a moment, 2013 model. Wow. So I've had it for 8 years, and unfortunately, you know, it started to slow and I thought, oh, I better do something about this. So I've acted, I just haven't acted quite quickly enough. Anyway, it's all going off to It's all going off to the shop, and hopefully it'll all be fine and I'll be back next week. But in the meantime, that was offset because I got a terrific review on the CBCA's reading time blog for The Wolf's Howl. Like I was having this terrible day, and then I got the notification, my publisher sent it through to me that this review had gone up. And I'm just going to tell you, so The Wolf's Howl apparently delivers it all. Mystery, suspense, action, and intrigue. And here's my favorite line in the whole thing: her storytelling transcends age groups. Now, do you think I should get that on a t-shirt? I'm thinking that I should get
I
that on
think
a
it should be
t-shirt.
written in the sky.
I know. It was just like talk about a way to turn a day around. I was like, yeah, whatever, emails, who needs them? Look at me, look at my review. But in other news, I have also, if you'd like to have a listen to the first chapter of The Wolf's Howl, if you would like to hear what Maven sounds like in my head when I'm writing her, I actually did a reading of it. And you talking about how long it takes to film something, and it takes an hour. I had to read the first chapter, and I recorded it for the So You Want to Be a Writer podcast, and I'll put the link in the show notes, but you'll find it, So You Want to Be a Writer, wherever you get your podcasts. And so I had to read the first chapter, which, shouldn't be that difficult. But when you have to do it yourself and you're not in a, in an audio recording studio, you kind of got to get it right in one go. There's not really space for editing and doing all that sort of stuff. And so I had to read the first chapter about three times to get to get it right, to make sure that I wasn't like stumbling over my words and, turning myself on my head and all of that kind of stuff. So it was quite an interesting process. I don't know how people read entire audiobooks without.
Surely there's a lot of takes.
Maybe there must be. I've never done it myself. I know Jacqueline Harvey does her own. I must
She
ask her about
does.
it. Yeah, she gets herself in a little booth and reads them. I must ask her about it. But yeah, it was quite an interesting process. And then of course you've got to listen to yourself, like to see what it sounds like. So you have to listen to yourself reading your book, which is, I can think of better ways to spend my time. I've having read it so many times when I was actually writing it, because one of the steps in my process is to read it out loud. So I have already read the entire manuscript out loud, but it wasn't the final version. It was a much, much earlier version. So it was a lot easier to read this time because, when you read it out loud to yourself the first time around, that's where you hear that you've got a sentence that goes for an entire paragraph and there's nowhere to breathe. Like that's where you hear all of that sort of stuff. I was pretty happy with how it sort of rolled out, but it was still a bit confronting to do it. Anyway, enough. Let's move on. Let us talk about book mail. What have we got? What's on your book mail pile this week?
Oh, I've got some really good ones. We're coming up to the Christmas season, as we talked about last week on the podcast. And so the books are rolling in. And I've got three really nice ones to share with you today. The first one is Big Love by Megan Jacobson and Beck Finer. And I've read it to all of my preps and ones this week, and it's absolutely gorgeous. I'll read you the blurb. How can you describe how big a parent's love is for their child? Is it as big as a house, as big as a city, as big as the world? It's the most beautiful picture book, Al. It's really beautifully designed. And I noted in the little thing they send with the book that it's actually the launch title for Walker Australia Studio, which is a new imprint from Walker Books, which showcases books which have really good design and superior production quality. And I would have to say it is a great title to launch on because it really is quite beautiful. Beck Finer is well known as a graphic designer doing some amazing work in this space. This one is just gorgeous, really, really giftable. What I really like about it is that it is about a parent's love for a child, but on every single page, there's different styles of parents represented. There's different styles in ethnicity. There is two dads pictured on one page. There's lots of single parents. And it was quite funny when I was reading through the book with some of my preps. We were talking about some of the different family groups that were represented, and somebody said, "Oh, that one could be a step parent like you." And I said, "Yeah, they could be." And a little boy yelled out, "Stepmoms can get cavities." And I was like,
"What?
Really?" Yeah, do you mean like a cavity in your tooth, mate? And he's like, yeah, stepmoms can get cavities. So I was like, yes, they can. Okay, let's just turn to the next page now.
Moving right along.
Where to go with that? I adore preps. They keep me so greatly amused. I adore them. So I've really enjoyed reading that book this week, and I can see it's one I'm going to use a lot at school. The second book I'm also using a lot in the next week or so. It's called What Do You Do to Celebrate by Ashley Barton and Martina Hinjezek. Now, this is by the creators of two other fantastic books called What Do You Call Your Grandpa and What Do You Call Your Grandma? In this one, it's a good title for Christmas, and I did briefly mention it last week in the podcast, but this one is a fascinating look at festivals and traditions from all around the world, but ones which occur like at the end of the year or into the new year. So it's got the giant lantern festival in the Filipino city of San Fernando. You visit France, Greece, Cape Town, Syria, so many different countries. It's a really beautiful picture book for an early childhood or lower primary audience. But, you know, just really celebrating festivals all around the world that happen at that kind of Christmassy end of the year or start of the new year. So I really wanted to highlight that one, because if you don't celebrate Christmas in your family or at school, this is a really good one to have because it showcases so many different festivals. And then my final one, I am just gushing and swooning over, and I am going to order about 10 copies. It is A Year in Fleurville by Felicia Salter, who also did 10 Pomegranate Street. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't think Felicia would be able to come back with anything better than Lunch at 10 Pomegranate Street, but I am going to call it now. I think A Year in Fleurville may actually top it. It is a cookbook. It is a mini guide to gardening. It is a picture book all rolled into one. And it is perfect for gift giving. I am going to give it to my 10-year-old at the start of the Christmas holidays because she is going to just love herself sick cooking all of those recipes. And you could give it, I think, from ages sort of 6 right up to 10, 11, 12. It's beautiful. So in this one, we do, I guess it's in some ways a sequel to Lunch at 10 Pomegranate Street, but this time we're looking at different gardens. And in each garden, someone is tending their produce, and some of them are up on apartment rooftops, and some of them have indoor herb gardens, and some of them are working in a community garden. And each group of people has got a recipe, and then at the end there's a bit of a guide to gardening and fruits and vegetables that you can grow easily at home. It is absolutely beautiful. It's a really big format picture book. I just love it. I cannot say enough good things about it, and it has not even been catalogued yet. I took it off the cataloguing trolley, which I'm sure Mrs. Malter was having a conniption about, because I just had to read it to some kids yesterday. I wanted to read it out loud. I'd read it myself, but I love reading something out loud. It reads aloud beautifully. It's wonderful. Anyway, what have you got?
That was a rave. Like right there. That was a rave.
I know it was, wasn't it? It was a bit of a gush.
No, we love a gush.
It's just beautiful. I'm so happy with it. I feel really proud. I mean, I haven't even met this author, illustrator, but I just always feel really proud, like some sort of librarian mother, whenever I see something that's utterly perfect.
You are so funny. Well, I've also got some very lovely book mail this week. I've got one, the new one from Jennifer Cousins, who, of course, is the author, illustrator of a huge range of fabulous kind of books about animals, and she had one recently, which was an alphabet book. She's got one called 101 Collective Nouns, and I mean, seriously, collective nouns, you get me every single time with a collective noun book. I love them so much. I actually included a whole range of collective nouns in the Mapmaker 4 when I started that, because I was just like, I'm just going to put these in because I love them so much. So I had Quinn, you know, reading a book that was teaching him about collective nouns. But this one out on October 25 is called The Book of Curious Birds by Jennifer Cousins. It is just gorgeous, like illustrated guide, all about different birds. And one of the reasons I love this one so much is that it includes the blue-footed booby, which is one of my favorite favorite birds, the clown of the Galapagos. It has bright blue feet. And it was
Wow.
hilarious. Oh, look, honestly, hilarious. And it, funnily enough, someone had, like, that very day, the day this book arrived, had tweeted on, you know, just sent out a random tweet that had gone viral. It was an image, a photograph of a blue-footed booby. And this person had said, "Today I discovered that there was a bird in the world called the blue-footed booby. You need to see this." And around it went. And it, I mean, they honestly have bright blue feet. They're hilarious. And very funny-looking birds. And anyway, I opened it up, and sure enough, he's the blue-footed booby in the Book of Curious Birds. So it's another one of those brilliant kind of, you know, there's a bit of a bit of a sort of a selection of this type of book out there in the world at the moment. Or maybe I'm just getting them, but they are gorgeous. There is just the right amount of, you know, beautiful image and text, fact-based text about them. Tells you just enough, just what you need to know about them, and probably no more. And I think that they're just, you know, beautiful. They'd be a terrific addition, a lovely gift for any kid who's got an interest in nature, science, or just fact books. Like, you know, some kids just love a good fact book. And these are lovely. Yep. The illustrations are absolutely beautiful. So I have that one. And then I also received, lucky me, I have received the latest in, speaking of Jacqueline Harvey, which we were earlier, the latest in the Kenzie and Max series for middle grade readers. It's called High Voltage. We have Kenzie and Max involved in a sort of F1 high-powered sports car kind of a situation. Lots and lots of adventure and humour and all of the things that, I mean, kids love this series. They absolutely love it. Who doesn't love Spy Kids?
I haven't seen this one yet, so I will have to, I've just written myself a note to go and order it immediately.
Yeah, it's, I think it's number 8 or something. And so it's out there in the world. And if you have a kid, a middle grade reader, who just, if you're looking for something that's kind of contemporary, engaging, lots of action, she just writes a great story, and she knows what kids this age want to read. So I would definitely be looking at that. There's 8 of them, and we know how kids love a series. So, you know, get them started on Kenzie and Max number 1 and move on up is all I can say, because I love a series for kids that sort of age, that middle grade, you know, 8 or 10 plus kind of age, because it just takes all the guesswork out of having to think about what to get next. And that's something that when you've got someone who reads a lot, or you've got someone who's a reluctant reader, as I have had both, if you find a series they like, perfect. Just takes all the guesswork out of it. And then the other one that I've got is actually, I've received 2 books from Affirm Press, and they are written by Kitty Black and illustrated by Jess Rose. And it's a little series called Follow Your Feelings. And I've got one here which is called Max and Worry, and one here which is called Lucy and Sad. And they are about, like, kids dealing with feelings, and it sort of shows in each one of them, like, we've got Max trying to manage, you know, worry, and the worry's talking to him, and he's trying to walk away from his worry, and his worry is following him everywhere he goes. So it's kind of like Max dealing with his worry, and it's a lovely illustrated series. And I think if you wanted, like, young, I'd say, you know, we're looking at kids probably around about 4 that you would be kind of reading this to. And then Lucy's not feeling great, you know. Sad filled her pockets with leaves, her head with kitten tangled wool, and her shoes with lead, like what it feels like to be sad. She sat with Sad, and Sad sat with her, and they were each alone. You know, and it sort of just then talks about how Lucy decides to, you know, that Sad's got to go. And, you know, she tries ignoring Sad, she tries disguising Sad, she tries running away from Sad. And then it's sort of how she manages, you know, how she manages to overcome this feeling of sadness that she has. So I think that could be really useful, really useful little series for helping kids to understand feelings and manage feelings. And they are out now. And, I can think of a few kids that,
yeah,
probably.
I read those to the small bees, and I've also recommended them to the counsellor at work, who's got an extensive collection of books along those lines. They are really lovely ones, beautifully illustrated, I thought.
Yes, absolutely lovely. Yeah, and just like an engaging narrative about a feeling. Like, feelings are hard to explain and hard to express, but through the words and the images, it does come together quite in a really lovely way. Well
And they
done,
weren't
Kitty
math.
and
They
Jess.
weren't math. I've seen a lot of books about feelings which are a bit like, yeah, but these ones were really lovely.
Okay, there you go. There's a review. Not.
They're not math.
Not now. All right. Well, that was our book mail for this week. Now, Megan, we must move on to the bingo question. And of course, the big bingo question on everybody's lips at the moment is all about festive season gift giving, or in our particular set of circumstances, festive season book giving, choosing the right book to give, the various young readers in your life. How do you find them? How do you come up with the book that's going to, engage them enough to actually pick it up over the school holidays, keep reading next year? Like, what are we talking about?
I'm actually going to go with, I now have such a range of kids in my own life that I'm going to split this up into what I am giving my own children for festive season this year. And it is quite funny with the small bees. They very quickly cottoned on to the idea that books are what is the gift of choice in this house. And fortunately, they both are enjoying that at the moment, although, obviously for Christmas, there will have to be other gifts alongside the books. But I'm going to take you through what I'm going to be giving to each of the kids, and I hope that that will be useful to a lot of people. I always give two sets of books, I guess, in the Christmas holidays. I give some books at the start of the summer holidays, kind of an end of school celebration. Yay, you made it through another year of school, and so did I. And here is some books to keep you amused on the holidays. And then obviously, I give some books at Christmas time. Now, for the books that I'm going to give for the start of the summer holidays, I am giving the little prep child some activity books because he is a big fan of all things activity book. So that might be some doodle books, that might be some Where's Wally books. That might be some colouring in type books, but I love those activity books for that younger age group, particularly if they are connected with a book or a TV series that they really enjoy. I am an out and proud Bluey fan, and there is an extensive range of Bluey activity books. The storytelling in those Bluey episodes is just so spot on, and the books are really good as well, and the activity books are fantastic. So he will be getting a little gift bag of Bluey activity books and definitely some Where's Wally. The year two child, who is 7 turning 8, Underdogs has probably been the biggest hit of the year for him, and he loves graphic novels. Hooned his way through the Underdogs and the Wings of Fire. So graphic novels is what he will be getting at the start of the holiday season. And I'm popping into Where the Wild Things Are on the weekend because I'm really hoping to find a new graphic novel series, which I will hopefully be able to talk about on an upcoming podcast episode, that will keep him entertained for a couple of weeks. The year four child, who is 10 and turning 11 next year, as I said earlier, I'm definitely getting her a year in Fleurville to go with lunch at 10 Pomegranate Street, which she got last year. And she's all about cooking, loves cooking. The Donaghey Kids Cookbook, I can highly recommend. She cooks from that one all the time. So she will be getting another cookbook. And she is also, now she's actually already finished these, but I'm going to recommend these for any, I'm going to say 10 to 13, 14 year olds in your life. My library technician at work, the lovely Mrs. Malta, put me onto a gorgeous two-part graphic novel series called starring Cece. The first one is called The Adventures of a Writer in Training, and the second one is called Lost and Found. They are a French translation. They feel incredibly French. They are beautiful, like they are worth purchasing for the illustrations alone. And Cece dreams of being a novelist, and her favorite subject is people, especially adults. So she watches the adults in her life and she takes notes on them. And she knows, she's worked out that every adult seems to have a special secret. And she likes to write down these secrets, and she paints and she journals and she scrapbooks There's recipes in them. There's little how to do things. The second one's got a how to bookbind section. They are glorious. As I said, they feel very French. And if you've got somebody who likes graphic novels, be aware the content is quite mature in terms of there are some big themes. Grief is a theme in the second book particularly. So I am saying 10 plus, but they are absolutely beautiful.
Gorgeous. I would those.
They are stunning. Like the illustrations, Mrs. Malter sort of had to show me for quite some time some of the gorgeous illustrations, particularly of Cece's French mother. They are just really beautiful. They're quite dark in tone. They're very rich feeling, really, really beautiful. I just love them. And the 10-year-old absolutely swallowed them up and enjoyed them. And then my teen has been reading for school. And I know that you've experienced this, Al. When the school reading takes over, a lot of recreational reading seems to fall off the radar. Yeah. But she's been doing Oscar Wilde and The Importance of Being Earnest and has been greatly enjoying writing her monologue assessment piece for that. So I am thinking that I might gift her some Oscar Wilde books for the start of the Christmas holidays. I'm not sure if that will traumatize her or if she'll be excited about that.
Yeah, wow. Okay, that's kind of a risky move. We might want to hear a little bit more about that later.
It is a risky move, but she's really, really enjoyed The Importance of Being Earnest. And she is absolutely entrenched in the Road to Winter series. So I'd highly recommend those ones for any teens in your life. Now, with Christmas gift giving, festive gift giving in general, I am, you probably cottoned on to, all about the set, or I love a bind up. But I do think it's really important that the book that you, or books that you are giving to a child, have to suit that child. There's no point in giving a child a set of Oscar Wilde books if you know they have no interest in them. I at least know my teen at this point does enjoy Oscar Wilde, but you don't want to give something that's then just going to sit on the shelves gathering dust. So I think it's really important that if you've got the opportunity that you take the children in your life on a bookshop visit, or you browse through some blogs with them, and you sort out what they would like to read. If you are a little bit hesitant to purchase a book for the young reader in your life or writer, I'm going to suggest that the Creative Writing Quest for Kids online course run by the remarkable Alison Tate could be a really good gift. It's a fantastic online writing course. And I also want to recommend, I had a parent years ago that put together a little library gift pack for her teenager who was obsessed with reading. And she made her up some little book plates and some little library borrowing cards and some gorgeous stamps that went on these little library borrowing cards and bookmarks. And it was a really beautiful gift set. And I made one the following year for my then 11-year-old. And she still loves it. You can make your own little bookmarks and little library borrowing cards. Just putting together something bookish like that. Book Geek's got some gorgeous things that you could put in a little pack if you are a bit nervous about buying an actual book. So I think book themed gifts are beautiful, beautiful, but please make sure that you know what sort of book the child might be wanting.
Yes, I totally agree with you on that. Like I think, you know, box sets are very seductive, particularly kind of big name box sets. But I've bought them in the past, you know, for particularly, you know, Book Boy Junior, and they had just remained tidily in the box ever since, you know, like yeah. They still look gorgeous. I wish there were box sets of A.L. Tate novels. Maybe one day I'll get a box set of the Mapmaker Chronicles or something. But I think two things. If you don't know the kid very well, like if you're going to a, you know, sometimes you've got to go to a thing and you've got to take a Kris Kringle or something like that. Yes. Like I do love a book for that sort of stuff. I would recommend for that, if you're looking for something and you're not quite sure what's what, have a look at the Kids Awards, the Children's Choice Book Awards. Like, for example, the Yabbas have just been announced. And, you know, there's Wolf Girl was one of the winners of that. There's a four-book box set of that available, or you could just buy one. Those kind of books that kids are recommending word of mouth to each other, you can't really go wrong with, in the sense that, you know, they'll probably at least have a go at something like that. Sick Bay by Nova Wheatman was a winner. Sally Rippon won for her, you know, contribution to children's literature, and she's done some brilliant things. So my suggestion would be to look at the shortlists for those awards, not just the winners, because there's, you know, four books on the winners list, but there's probably, you know, 40 on the shortlist. So just have a look at what's available for the age group that you're looking for. I personally think you can't really go wrong often with an adventure story like Percy Jackson, Ranger's Apprentice, but it does come back to knowing the reader. And my suggestion for that, the best possible thing that you can do, particularly if you're talking about nieces and nephews who you love and adore but possibly don't see that often, and you know, kids change an awful lot from Christmas to Christmas, so, or from festive season to festive season, so what you were buying last year, you know, they may have gone full goth on you by the time you get to the next Christmas, so you really need to kind of make some, have some questions. So I generally buy books for my nieces and nephews. I have many, but I always check in with the, you know, with my siblings to say, what about this one for this kid or this one for that kid? And I just wanted to flag with you that our friend Nick Avery, who we have talked about on this podcast before at planningwithkids.com, has got this great spreadsheet that you can download. She does love a spreadsheet. You can actually download it. I will put the link in the show notes, but if you have a look at her Christmas gift ideas blog post, you will find it. There is a spreadsheet that you can download that you can share with your, you know, extended family if there's an extended family situation going on. And it just allows you each to maybe, if there's a book that a kid really wants, you really want to buy that book, right? So if the parent of that kid puts that on the spreadsheet, it just makes life so much easier for everybody. So, you know, have a look at the spreadsheet. You could share it with the extended family and just let's just kind of make the whole gift giving thing as easy as possible. So you will find it at planningwithkids.com, but we will put the link in the show notes at yourkidsnextread.com. Right. That was the gift giving. Gift giving is so difficult. It can be so fraught, can't it? But I just think we, you know, let's make it as easy as possible for ourselves. And books are always a good idea.
They're also very easy to wrap.
Oh, that's the other thing about them. They wrap so beautifully and you can put a bow around them and it all goes right. It's not like some of the things I've wrapped over the years have just, you know, and everyone says just put it in a box. But you don't always have a box handy, do you? It's not always that easy. And if you are not crafty, like me, even the wrapping of the present can be, you know, a little bit, you know, my sister, one of them in particular, Maxabella, who you can find at mumlife.com.au. She has the most beautiful looking website with all of this great stuff on there. And she's always been like, presentation is she's so good at it. And so she wraps her gifts and they're immaculate and they've got bows and bells and whistles. And, you know, half the time mine are wrapped in a shopping bag. Like it's, I'm sort of letting the team down a bit. Anyway, let's move on, Megan, to our quick tips this week. What have you got for us?
Okay, I am going to share some tips for getting through to the end of the year with school readers. The children are all exhausted, aren't they just? There is meltdowns aplenty. We had one just this morning getting the preppy off. He just was like, I am too tired. And so I do know that it's a hard slog getting to the end of the year with the school readers, but I want to encourage you to keep on going because it's a long holiday coming up and we do see a bit of a slip backwards with reading sometimes in the summer holidays. So keep up with the readers as long as you can, the home readers, and then over the Christmas holidays, you can supplement with some fantastic, beautiful quality literature before we go back into school reader territory for 2022. But if you've got some exhausted small people, here's a couple of tips about keeping up the momentum. I find that if you can get the reader done in the car on the way home from school, that makes the afternoon a lot better. Often it's, I know that seems ridiculous, but I have done that with my girls for years. I've been like, let's get the reader out and just do it in the car on the way home. And they either read it aloud and I've just kind of kept up with them, or they've read it to a sibling in the car on the way home. That can be a really good way to just get it done. It's also a really good idea to get them outside to do some reading in the afternoons. There is that slump once they've got into the car, and if you haven't managed to get the reader done in the car, sometimes I have found my kids by the time they get home are nearly asleep. What I tend to do is give them some fruit and get them outside in the sun. We've got a trampoline in the backyard. And this week we've done, when it hasn't been storming, readers on the trampoline in the backyard, because I just think a hit of sunlight and getting through those readers is a really good way to combine a little bit of physical activity, a bit of sunlight, and getting that reader done. Reading to the dog or siblings is a really good one as well, because it takes the pressure off reading to the parent or caregiver, because, you know, often little people manage to keep it together at school, but then when they get home to the parent or caregiver, they suddenly just let it all out and the tears start happening. And so passing on the job of the school reader to the dog or to the siblings can be a really good way to just, you know, separate slightly from the child. My dog has listened to that many readers over the years that surely he can read by now.
Does he give good feedback though? That's the question I have to ask. Yes. Like, how's his correction?
So, I think it, you know, calms his anxiety. So I quite like them reading to the dog anyway. And then finally, when all else fails, it's a bit like going to rugby training. We had rugby training yesterday. The smallest B was not excited. He was exhausted. And I just said, your coach is going to be disappointed if you don't put in your all. You know you have to go to training to improve your skills, and it is the same with the readers. I have literally just said to all of the kids this week, I know you are really tired, but this is like rugby training or netball training or piano practice. You just need to get it done. And I am all about loving reading and creating neural pathways associating reading with joy. But as we come to the end of the school year, I want to reassure you that even I am just pushing through to the end and encouraging us to just get the job done. And then we will get back into recreational reading over the holidays. But for now, get the job done.
Get the job done. It's so true. I mean, there's so much of life just comes down to that, don't you find? Like, just absolutely. Get it done. Let's get it done. Do what you have to do. Then you can do what you want to do. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Now, my quick tips this week are kind of related to my other quick tips from last week, because I got some great feedback in the Your Kids Next Read group from Justine Cooper and a whole bunch of teachers who told me that they've been taking down notes of my writing tips for kids and have been sharing them with other teachers at the school and that sort of stuff. So my quick tip this week is that I've actually got three short videos on my website at alisontate.com in which I share writing tips for kids, and also there's one there for teen writers. So I'll put the link in the show notes, but you will find them at alisontate.com. Just search in the search bar three short videos and it will come up for you. And there's just, they're only sort of, you know, 5 to 10 minutes each, but they're just a couple of just me discussing some of the things that I have talked about and a couple of other things that I haven't talked about. And I just thought if you are using my quick writing tips in that way, you might find it useful to hear me actually, or your kids might find it useful to hear me actually talking about it. And as an update to my recent, I think it was last episode where I talked about reading like a writer, I've actually created a blog post to summarize that, because I got some feedback to say I was trying to take it all down and I didn't get it. So I've actually created a blog post at alisontate.com. It's called Writing for Kids, How to Read Like a Writer. Again, if you want to just search it, you'll find it there, or the link will be in the show notes at yourkidsnextread.com. Just a like tidy little summary of my ravings from last week. And that's it for this week. Those are my quick tips. Megan, what is going on? What will you be doing till we meet again?
Yeah, well, as many of you know, my dog has been on human Valium for quite some years now. He is terribly anxious. We've gotten to the point in our lives where the human Valium is no longer cutting it, and he has
Where do you go from there?
On numerous occasions, he chewed through a piano leg last week, a door, some steps and some glass louvers, resulting in what looked like a murder scene in my bedroom. So we've had a bit of a trip to the vet, and he's just taken, as we started the podcast, so I'm just going to be watching my dog for the next hour or so. He's just been given a stronger zonk him out type basically a tranquilizer. I've tranquilized my dog while we get through this storm today. And then he's popping down to the vet for a little bit of surgery early next week, because when he was chewing through the step door piano leg, he managed to break an incisor tooth in half. Half of it fell out. Half of it, unfortunately, went up into his jaw and is now sitting in his gum. So that has to come out. So, you know, welcome to my life.
Okay. Poor dog. I mean, really. I mean, poor Megan, but also poor dog. imagine having that reaction to anything. I'm just like, wow. But I also understand that managing the aftermath of that is not easy. Not easy. Well, I won't be doing that. I'm not sort of, you know, medicating or anything like that anybody this week. I think I'm just going to be, well, I'll be living with the repercussions of my computer not being here for a couple of days while it goes and gets itself fixed. But then, you know what? I'm going to be a whole new person. I'm going to be so modern. I'll be totally up to date with my brand new, all the stuff going on. I'll probably sound much more modern next week when you talk to me, because I will have all of my new bits in place, and I'm very much looking forward to that. The other thing I'm really looking forward to and I'm very excited about is that I've been making good progress on my edits, and I think it will probably be finished by the end of next week. And I'm very excited about that, because it's, you know, it hasn't been an easy one for me. So I'm looking forward to getting to the end of that. And then I'm really just looking forward to starting writing something new. So that's going to be the next thing after that. So that's the thing with being a writer, you know, it's not like you just write the one book and then that's it, it's over. You kind of, it's just a constant thing. I'm constantly writing things. I wrote out a list the other day of all the various projects that I've got at various stages. For someone, and there's about 13 things on that list at various stages. Some of them are totally complete, you know, needing an edit. Some of them are just ideas. Some of them are half done. Some of them are, you know, there's just constantly something that needs to be, you know, thought about or looked at, or, you know, which I'm not complaining about it, because it's good to have ideas, right? But when I write them all out like that, it's like, wow, okay, I probably should just get on and do some of these things.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. Anyway, where are we going to find you until we meet again, Megan?
Look, I'll probably be over on Instagram or at Children's Books Daily.
You are Children's Books Daily on all of the things except for Daily Reads, which you are on Twitter. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am.
All right. And you will, of course, find me at alisontate.com. You will find me on Facebook and Instagram at Alison Tate Writer. And you will find me on Twitter at Al Tate. You can connect with me in all of the places, because I do love talking to people. We would love to hear your thoughts on anything that you've heard in the podcast. And of course, you know, if you are so moved, please leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts, because it really helps us to get the word out about the podcast. And in the meantime, check out the show notes at yourkidsnextread.com. Bye.
See you next week.